Yeah, so I've given this talk on using slides, but since the organizers prefer Blackboard, I'm doing it because it's more fun anyway. So I had to make up new jokes, but it's actually good. We're about to write the paper, so now I have the jokes for the paper. So I'll tell you what they are, but let me give the introduction. That's part zero of the talk. And that will hopefully give an idea what the parts one through four are of the talk. So you heard about it yesterday for those at the talk yesterday afternoon, there's this thing called the Kataev chain, which has another name. It's the icing chain. But Kataev said some really interesting things about it. So, I mean, the icing chain has this ancient history, going back to Ansagar and all that. And in fact, the thing I'm going to talk about was computed by Fudi in 1970 and then recomputed by Kataev in his famous 97 Majorana paper where he sort of reinvented it. And that's why the icing chain got renamed in certain circles, the icing chain. But the key thing Kataev did was take what's a question someone should have asked, but nobody did, in the 70-year history of the icing chain. The solution of the icing chain. And so everyone in this room probably knows the way you solve the one-dimensional quantum icing chain or the two-dimensional classical icing model is to map it onto free fermions. That's usually called the Jordan-Wigner transformation. And then you, it's a free fermion model, you can compute lots of stuff. But the basic physics of the icing model is that you can see by doing this calculation is that, well, there's an ordered phase. The couplings are such, and I'll write down the Hamiltonian in a bit. But there's an ordered phase and there's a disordered phase. And so the ordered phase is kind of obvious. The icing model is just a two-state spin system. So you have all the spins lined up. It's like in the classical model, it's the low temperature phase, just all the spins line up. And since you have two spins per site, well, it's all up or all down. You can make it an anti-ferromagnet, do some other stuff, but we're just going to do the ferromagnet. So just all up or all down. So that's obvious. I mean, everybody's known that since the 20s or whatever, this kind of physics happens. But what no one really asked until Kataev is what's going on when you rewrite that icing model in terms of fermions, the way we solved it since the 40s. And so what's the analog of that ordered phase? What does it mean in the fermionic language? And no one, I think, really asked this question. There's these great reviews by Schultz, Mattis, Lieb in the 60s, and they probably even mumbled the word superconductor, so they knew if you rewrote the icing Hamiltonian in terms of fermions, it looked like a superconductor. And no one said, what's the ordered phase? And it's not an obvious, maybe it's an obvious question, but the answer isn't obvious, because the map from spins to fermions is non-local. And so then the question comes, well, what, you know, so order in the spin language, what does that mean in the fermionic language? Because the fermions are non-local. And so what Kataev answered in this, what year was that paper? 1999 or something like that? 2000, yeah, now 16 years ago. He answered that what the ordered phase in the spin language, the sort of obvious all up or all down thing, is actually topological order in the fermionic language. And Q, of course, now that no doubt thousands of talks in this room have been on topological order. And so lots was learned and it's a whole big story. They're making them in the lab now, probably. And so so it's an exciting thing. But so, I do step mech for a living. And so then the question you can ask, okay, that was a great insight. And lots of people studying topological order learned a lot. But you can ask for us boring old step mech people, What have we learned anything about this other than the physical interpretation? And so what I'm going to tell you about is something that becomes very apparent in the fermionic language. Now I'm going to port it back to the bosonic language and then tell you what it means. And so that's what the strong zero mode. So that's the introduction. So basically motivated by this stuff coming out. And the basic idea is, this is something I'll explain very carefully in a few minutes. So in a topological phase, well, you have degenerate ground states. And sort of not coming from symmetry. But in icing, and the icing spin thing, it does come from symmetry. It's just the Z2 symmetry. So again, this is what I meant now, the maybe more refined version of what I said before. In the icing, we have two ground states, all spin up or spin down, and they're related by symmetry. So of course, if one is a ground state, the other one has to be a ground state. But that's not obvious in the fermionic language, and the reason, of course, again, is this non-locality. And so what I'm going to show you is that the statement where you understand this, it gives you something else. And what that is there's a degeneracy in the entire spectrum. So that's already kind of cool. And all the work on MBL that's been going on, I don't know if we're going to hear about anything about MBL this week, but it's kind of hard to, you can't swing a cat without hitting someone doing MBL now. So we'll probably talk about one of the things that MBL people motivated us to do was look at the entire spectrum of a model, not just the ground states. And so what we're seeing here, and again, I'm going to give you how this explicitly works in the icing model, you have degenerate ground states, and that's what it means to have a topological phase. But actually in this model, which not many people discussed, the whole spectrum is degenerate. So that's the something new. And then the consequence of this, that's going to talk about as we go on, is this, well, I don't have to write it out here, is that the boundary magnetization lasts forever. And I'll prove that. Since it's Blackboard talk, I'm actually going to do one small calculation. It's like a class you're in here. You're going to have to, if you want to fall asleep, you know, you get slides, but this one, we'll do the interactive class teaching here. And then hopefully I'll have time at the end to talk about some new work. So I should mention my wonderful collaborators, Jack Kemp, my student, Norm Yao, and Chris Lauman, who many of you know. And I want to talk about what happens when you break integrability, it turns out. And then you get something we've dubbed, or at least we need a better name, but this is my name so far, an almost strong zero mode. And what happens there is then the coherence time is very long. And so that's really neat, and that's the new work that, yeah, I'll get to that. Okay.
So what's the difference between 3 and 4?
The angle is bad here. 4 is the almost strong zero mode, and it lasts almost forever.
But in a different model?
Different models, right. So in some models, this is true. And it turns out, I said the word integrability, and the examples we know that have this are integrable. That's not a proof, but there's various reasons why that makes sense. And then these are examples where the very similar physics happens, but they're not integral. So it goes wrong, but it takes a long, long time to go wrong. And so why the boundary magnetization lasts forever, I mean, even at infinite temperature. So this is a remarkable statement that I didn't appreciate before. So if you have the icing model at infinite temperature and just ask, you're in the ordered phase, I mean, the couplings are such that's in an ordered phase, but you prepare an initial state that's at infinite temperature. Basically, the boundary is still magnetized, which is bizarre. I mean, and I'll prove that. That's easy to prove once you set it up. So that's, and then I'll sort of explain how that happens in other models. Good. Any questions about the philosophy?
This is one-dimensional.
So this is all going to be 1D today.
Magnetized at infinite temperature.
Well, just the boundary spin, not the bulk, just the boundary spin. But it says something that even if you have this complicated stuff in the interaction, the icing model, because there's this conservation law, if you wish, that I'm going to show you, that thing still, if it starts out at spin up, it's more likely to be spin up at even at infinite temperature. And so in the ground state, this would be obvious, because it's the couplings are such that it's an ordered phase. So of course, you know, even if you start in whatever state, it'll likely end. Where it's not obvious, it's that if you start in, say, sum over all states, it'll still be.
But the probability goes to 0.5 as the temperature goes to infinity.
The probability.
Agreeing.
What?
The probability of the two ends having the same.
No, the probability depends on the coupling. I'll derive the formula.
Well, no, it should have dependence on the coupling, but it also has dependence on the temperature, and the probability should go to.
It won't depend on the temperature at all. I mean, you'll see. So it'll be the same, unless you pick some strange initial state. If you pick sort of a generic eigenstate, say, or a generic sum over eigenstates at the beginning, it'll have the value that I just showed.
What do you mean by beginnings? You're talking about dynamics.
I'm talking about dynamics, that's right. Talking about dynamics. So the statement about the spectrum, of course, that's not a statement about dynamics. That I'm going to show you, of course, I'm showing you. But once I show you that, then so the consequence of having the spectrum like this is when you do the dynamics, you get this thing lasting forever. Okay. That's right, I should have said this review is in Annual Reviews of Condensed Matter Physics, since the editor invited me. And Jason is right there. But okay, so let's start out. So the icing Hamiltonian is, again, something you've probably seen before. So I'm always in this talk going to be an open system. To get all this stuff to work out, you have to be an open system. So note this ends at L minus 1, so it's just an icing chain, a bunch of two-state quantum systems. I want to be fancy. The Hilbert space is C2, a bunch of C2s tensored together. It's a two-state quantum system. Quantum systems. So that's the model. It goes back nearly a century. So just a bunch of quantum systems. This term, wrong coupling is used. Let's do a minus sign so I can conform. So this is called a transverse field term. This flips the spin as you evolve in time. This thing, doesn't matter for what I'm doing, but we'll take J positive for ease. So this makes the spins want to align. So again, you can fermionize this if you want, but why I called this reinventing the fermion, another thing was too long to write. I should have said the way Jordan and Wigner could have invented their transformation. So I usually, when I give this talk, I just write down the transformation and then say, magically it turns into a bilinear in terms of fermions. You can solve and compute everything, all which is true. But if you do what I'm about to do, you probably would have discovered the fermion. And by the way, if anyone knows what Jordan and Wigner were doing, please tell me. I've asked this numerous times, even last time I did in Germany. And so, because the paper's only in German, it's, as far as I know, never been translated. And at least one guy glanced at it a little, said it was, they were doing something, they were motivated by the Heisenberg model. So Heisenberg had written his paper and they were trying to sort of extend that further. Beyond that, then, no, I think Roderick Messner complained, it's written in this awful old German, it's hard to read. So even the Germans, as far as I know, haven't read that paper. And I don't know what they were doing, but this is what I'm about to show you is what they could have done if they had thought to ask this question. Maybe not. But they would have discovered, we could have discovered the fermion. Okay, anyway, so that's what I'm going to show you. So that's the system. So I'm not going to just write down the Jordan-Wigner transformation. I'm going to talk about the physics of this a little, and for the people here yesterday, you heard a bit of this. So let's if you look at this, so let's just look on the computer. And if you look at the region gamma less than J, so that's where the transverse field is small relative to the ordering. So you might expect this would be the ordered phase. Ordered phase. And indeed, if you just look at it on the computer, you find an interesting thing. So let's look at, there's two sectors of the theory. Okay? And it's under the Z2 symmetry, which in the fermionic language would be fermion number parity, but we're not doing fermions today. So what it is in this language is just spin flip symmetry. You flip all the spins, and that commutes with the Hamiltonian. So even though I said I'm not doing fermions, I'll name it that. So it's some symmetry generator, and this symmetry generator commutes with the Hamiltonian. It's obvious to see. You flip all the spins, it commutes with this one, and since you're flipping all the spins, that just measures where spins are same or different, so it commutes with that. And so you can get two sectors under minus 1 to the f equals 1, and minus 1 to the f equals minus 1. That's symmetry because it commutes with the Hamiltonian. Obviously, it squares to 1, flip it, flip back. All right, so you look on the computer at this thing, and you see what happens for gamma less than j. So what I'm going to do is plot the spectrum, so energy is going up. And so sure enough, you see that these ground states, there's 2 ground states at almost the same energy. And splitting is order, if you look at it really carefully, order gamma over j to L, where F and L, notice the size of the system between the 2 states. So this is victory. So from the point of view of spontaneous symmetry breaker, we spontaneously broke that symmetry. There's degenerate ground states. Again, in the fermionic language, this is the topological order. These are the states that are degenerate, even though we don't have a local symmetry in that language. Okay, but so okay, so that's ancient stuff, Q, Majoranas, etc. But then if you look at the entire spectrum, you find that this property holds for the entire spectrum. Now, if you go to L large, it's hard to see it on the computer because all the states get together, but if you do it for small system size. So the splitting is true for all the levels. Everybody in one sector has a partner in the other, and they're splitting in energy as all of you.
But isn't the energy level splitting of those states in a given sector exponentially smaller than L as well?
That's right. That's right. But that's why I say, that's why I say, look first at, right, I say just a curious thing, look even at, look first at small system sizes. Because, yeah, I agree. The point is they get close together, so it's not clear whether... That statement, I'm going to show you in a minute, the statement I just made does have meaning, but I say just look at 8 or 10 sites, and you see already, it's very curious. Because you look at a random system, this is not true, even when they're spontaneous broken. In other words, lots of systems where you'll see the ground states are degenerate, but then this doesn't happen. The 3-state Potts model being one example. It's just not true there. It's true here. So you might go, well, this is curious. What's going on? Okay, good. Any other questions?
Are you suggesting there's a supersymmetry? You can map one state, another state, map that state.
Much as I love supersymmetry, I think this is a different, slightly different thing. Although you'll, when I show you what I'm about to show you, you're probably going to say that's supersymmetry, and if it's not really, but anyway, I'll it's not really a symmetry. Actually, my view on this is it's not really symmetry because of the exponential splitting. If you have a symmetry, that means it's an exact degeneracy.
So it's a symmetry only in the thermodynamic limit or something?
Well, in the L go, we're not doing thermodynamics yet. It's a symmetry only in L goes
infinity.
Yeah. But then it's still, I don't think of it as a symmetry. I think of it as a strong zero mode, and so that's what I'm about to show you. And I think it's not quite the same thing. Good. Any more questions?
Why isn't it an exact symmetry between the spectrums since the commutator is zero?
No, so because the fact that there's a symmetry just means I can split it into these 2 sectors. So I've already that takes into account the symmetry. So there's no guarantee that the 2 sectors have the same spectrum. I mean, because this one's eigenvalue 1 and minus 1. Like, say, if you do the 3-state Potts model, there's just no reason why it should be. That's a, it's puzzling. So this is what people actually call zero. Maybe people know about these things in the old days. That's what they call zero modes when you have these operators that commute the Hamiltonian, and that's what I'm about to show you.
You can label the spectrum by the eigenvalues.
Yeah, exactly. When what happens if you do this with free fermions, this is what Fudi did in 1970, you see that there's a mode that takes you from here to here. There's an operator. So there's a fermionic mode that's a 2-state system, and that's what I'm about to show you. But using now some maybe Kataev motivated stuff. Well, I said Fudi did it anyway. He just didn't think about it in the way I'm about to tell you. But his computation is there. In fact, Schultz, Madison, Leib could have done this calculation, and I bet did. But I've never found a place where they did. Okay, so let's leave that up. I think we can. Okay, so what? Move that Hamiltonian up. Okay, so the calculation is easy. So here's what Kataev said he was talking about fermions. Talking about edge zero modes and fermions, but let me just re-say what he said in the bosonic language, because actually it's just as easy as what he said. So he said, well, let's look at the limit now, gamma equals zero. Okay, this extreme limit. So this model is trivial to solve. There's only a diagonal term. If you write any eigenstate of the sigma set J, for all J, is eigenstate of H. So in other words, we write any state in our usual basis, and it's an eigenstate. And so, the ground state are just all plus, or all minus. The other ones are okay. But now let's do something. I want to look at these two states, and since I diagonalized with respect to the symmetry, right, and that symmetry, I just erased it, but that's all the spin flips. So this one isn't an eigenstate of this operator, the symmetry operator, but you have to look at the two linear combinations. So let's write it that way. So this one would be all pluses plus all minuses. This one would be pluses minus minuses. That state. What's that say? So that's an extreme limit. But now it's easy to construct an operator. Actually, there's lots of operators that toggle between the two. So I'll look at one of them because this is the one that turns out to be useful when we move on. But then, so the operator sigma 1z, well, obviously, we'll just toggle in between these two. Oops. Sorry, that's a minus. Sorry. Right. So if you just act with sigma 1z, you flip that sign and you change the sectors. But actually, you see, it does does all the sectors. Everyone pairs with a partner over there, which is pretty obvious when you write it down. There's these huge degeneracies in this crazy one. But what's, I think, not maybe appreciated as much as it ought to be is what's interesting about this is that it survives when you turn on this gamma term. And that's what's interesting. So that's really what's interesting about what Kataev said. If it went away the moment you turned on gamma. And again, if you do this for the three-state POTS model, you'll get a threefold degeneracy in this trivial limit, but the moment you turn on gamma, it goes away. So it's not an obvious statement. The ground state, I should say, the ground state will mean threefold degenerate, but the excited states won't.
So it's not integrability only, I mean, because...
I ask that question again later on. It's...
Well, the three-state POTS model is integrable.
It's actually not off the critical point.
I see, okay.
So it's not. But there's... The precise statement to make what integrability has to do this is still not clear to us. Integrability for the... So that's the distinction between points 3 and 4 over there. All the examples we know of where this is exact are integrable, which, again, that's probably necessary. But the other cases are not integrable, but there's still effects of this. Yeah. But ask that again as we go.
Just I can follow the choice of you know, how you divide over there. Mm-hmm. Instead of all plus and all minus, you're taking the linear combination of even and odd.
Right.
And that's because you want it to relate to the Fermi parity.
Well, I did Fermi parity because everyone in the audience knows this, but just, I have in the Ising model, that's the only Z2 symmetry of the Ising model, right? Just flip all the spins. And so it makes sense when you look at the spectrum, you want to put it in, might as well subdivide the Hamiltonian into block diagonal bits.
Yeah,
and so that's all we're doing.
So why are we not doing, you know, plus on the left and minus on the right? Why are we doing...
Well, because notice that... Because remember, the symmetry generator flips all the spins. Mm-hmm. So this linear combination is even under that, mm-hmm. whereas this linear combination is odd under that.
Okay.
That's all.
Okay.
Nothing more than that.
Well, Paul, are you saying that there's sigma zi on every site? It's the independent. No.
Yeah, I could do this on any site at this point. At this point, in this limit, I could do it on any site, but I'm starting to go away from this limit, and this turns out to be the one you want to do for reasons I'll explain.
But sorry, there's a sigma, what is the label there?
Oh, so sigma one, so this is the operator sigma z acting on the first site.
On the first site.
So it's the same, yeah, it's this okay. I mean, same label that are...
I'm gamut on any site, you could...
Yeah, so when gamma is zero, I could obviously take sigma 1 z on any site, and there would be this parent. But when we turn it on, this is the right, this ex post facto, this is what we want to do.
And that's ultimately will lead to the persistence of the boundary?
Ultimately, yeah. We'll get there. This is good. It's fun to give a blackboard talk. You explain a really basic example really well, and then I just state without proof the hard ones. Good. Yeah, please ask questions. It keeps us awake. Caffeine's beginning to lag. Okay, so now I want to do... Okay, so this is all completely obvious. And like I say, the key thing what Kataya did, and I think that, like I say, it's not sufficiently appreciated, says this pairing, this degeneracy, so he's mostly interested in this, but turns out it has this consequence for the entire spectrum, still survives. And let's see that, and let's construct this operator now there. So let's ask what happens. So let me get a little formal. So this is the one calculation I'm going to do in this talk. So in other words, if we compute that thing in the limit, gamma goes to zero, well, that just equals zero, right? But sigma 1 z anti-commutes, with minus 1 to the f, right? Because when minus 1 to the f flips all the spins, so if you measure the spin, obviously, depending on what order you do it in, there. And so ergo, it commutes with the Hamiltonian. So in this case, it is a symmetry, if you wish, in this trivial limit. So this is, and, but now let's go away from that limit. So in general, so now let's take h sigma 1 z. The full h. Well, so you get some term gamma. Well, it mostly commutes, but this term, when j equals 1, doesn't commute. And so what I get is minus twice gamma sigma 1 x sigma 1 z. And sorry, I live in England now, that's why I say z. So that's not a hard calculation. Got to do a calculation, it's a blackboard. But then you notice quickly, what?
Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, no, that's right. Commutator. Right, because, yeah, all the other terms commute with this. This one, they anti-commute, and that's why it's just twice that.
Right.
That's the one where they don't commute. Good? Okay, but now notice, if I take the combination sigma 1 z plus sigma 1 x. Sorry, can everyone read this down here? Sure. Check up there. Okay. So I'm adding a correction term in. Well, what you get is you get minus 2, the term we just had. But now I get a term of this guy with the first one of these, because this one's got a sigma 1 x, so it won't commute with that. So I get another term, which you can see in 2 seconds, is the following. So I'm not done, but you do get a term that cancels that. But then I get another term, which let me look, and let's just make sure I write it down correctly. So we added this term in. It cancels off this bad term, the one we didn't want. But we get a new term. But now I can add something in to cancel that one, and I keep going. And so now, what you see, if you keep adding terms in, so I add sigma 1z plus gamma over j sigma 1x, sigma 2z plus, you can maybe guess what's going to happen next. And this is why I said this Jordan Figner maybe would have invented, could have invented it this way, but they had done this. So you just keep adding these things in here. I add that term and that term and that term. And all you Majorana people, I hope, will at this point recognize that's the Jordan-Vigne transformation. Each of these pieces. So this would be like the first Majorana fermion. That's the third. That's the fifth and all that. But we're not doing fermions today. So. But then this equals just something that's order gamma over j to the L. Just keeps getting higher.
So when gamma was zero, you had lots of symmetry operators.
Yeah, there is, but forget all those. Those are crap, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, all those are junk, meaning that the moment you turn in gamma, they're meaningless.
Right.
For this.
With gamma zero, you had all sigma I of z.
Yeah,
now,
exactly. Now, this is what you got.
Operator.
Exactly. Uh-huh. This is what you got. And so again, you can call it a symmetry operator, but it's not quite because of this correction.
Couldn't you go from the other end?
Yeah. And you'll get I wrote the odd fermions, you've got the even ones coming from the other end. Yeah. So, this is now the operator. So let's call the operator psi, capital psi, to be this combination. So let me just time some normalization. Sorry.
Once you have gamma, you don't quite have the degeneracy anymore.
No, it's now exponentially split. Mm-hmm. So this operator psi, so I'll put a normalization in. So yeah, let me finish off the normalization. So the one thing I need to check now, this looks too good to be true, this looks like there may be a degeneracy for all gamma, and we only want it in the ordered phase. But then the key is, notice this is gamma over j squared. So you might think, well, this better converge if this is going to be meaningful. And so the way to check now is just compute psi squared. Now, if you wrote this in terms of fermions, the formula I'm about to write down is totally obvious, but it takes 5 minutes to do it a couple minutes to just sort it out. But basically, all the different terms, if they're different terms, when I square this, they anti-commute, so they vanish. Fermions on different sites anti-commute. And the only ones you get when you square that one and square that one and square that one. So what I get is this normalization squared times 1 plus gamma over j squared plus gamma over j to the fourth. And so you see that this normalization, at least up to these exponentially small corrections, looks like that. And so now we recover this fact. Well, that there's a phase transition at gamma equals j. So what happens is this exponentially small splitting between the levels. So in fact, now thanks to the MBL people, and the beautiful paper, Arjit's here, right? There's Arjit. So Arjit and collaborators wrote to where they named something an eigenstate phase transition, when something about the full eigen spectrum also happened. So it turns out the Ising / Majorana / Kataev chain doesn't only have a quantum phase transition at gamma equals j. It has an eigenstate phase transition. So this entire spectrum no longer becomes degenerate there. So it happens at the same place, but there are two related, but not the same statement.
So, I mean, it was never degenerate, even...
Well, almost degenerate. Yeah, sorry, almost.
It went from almost degenerate to what?
It goes almost to nothing. I mean, so just like the ground state In the disordered phase, so gamma greater than j is not unique. You know, there's some shift. You can compute it. Mm-hmm. Basically, because in the spin language, nothing's ordered. So there's a unique disordered ground state. Mm-hmm. But also, as a consequence, this pairing that I just defined. So that's an answer to Matthew's question. So this operator is a precise operator. So that's what I mean by pairing. There's an operator that takes a state that almost commutes with the Hamiltonian. So it commutes with the Hamiltonian up to terms like this. So these were our rules that Jason and I categorized in our review article. So this is the definition of a strong zero mode, or these are a little stronger than you need to make, but you need an operator psi that obeys H psi. Almost commutes with the Hamiltonian. You need to say, again, this is the fermionic version. For the parafermionic version, you replace these with a slightly more complicated object.
Well, so you're perpetuating the terminology of calling an operator a mode?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's actually one point. So this is something that everyone, including me, gets confused about. What Kataev said, so people often talk about states, and they say there's degenerate states, you know, and these are things, and they might call that a zero mode. When I say mode, I mean an actual operator that behaves this way. So the mode is the operator. And that's, I think, usually, like in the field theory literature, it would be what people would call mode. It's, you know, you expand the fermion in a bunch of, you know, fermionic operator in some basis, and this is one of the things.
To clarify my mind, is this the terminology that drives Nick Reed crazy?
Calling it a mode and not an operator?
Yeah,
yeah, probably. Okay. No, we should call an operator, right? So,
okay.
Yeah, we should call it an edge zero, mode operator, but, I mean, you want to say the mode zero operator sounds bizarre, so you can't say zero operators. You have to say zero mode operator. It's the one that makes...
The operator creates a mode if you act on it.
Yeah, right, yeah.
I know, create, yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree. We should call them operators, but zero operator sounds good. So people would say zero mode operator, but that's too long, so you just say zero mode. But yeah.
Is there any other model that does this?
An operator creates.
Yes, that's what I'm going to get to. Yeah, I got time, right? I still got 20 minutes, but yes, the answer.
What did you mean again about almost degenerate? What does it?
Yeah, I forgot. Almost the exponential splitting. And in this language, it's due to this. So that's what I mean by almost.
There's both the pairing and the.
So you have the pairing, but the pairing is not exact.
The eigenvalue under H.
The eigenvalue, the H eigenvalue.
But the difference for each pair?
The difference for each pair is exponentially small in the system size.
And it's the same for each pair?
Well, nice thing it is. In general, it's not. But there. I'm going to run out of time, but that's okay. Yeah, right.
And you lose the pairing, or is just there's no clean?
So when gamma gets greater than J, you just lose this. This operator isn't normalizable. It doesn't happen anymore. But for large system sizes, this operator is normalizable. So let me finish the conditions, and that psi squared is finite. I mean, it's let's say it's 1 plus exponentially. And by 1, I mean the operator 1. It pains me now to think I'm offending Nick Reed, so maybe we have to rename this thing.
So why is this third condition important?
Because if it were normalizable, if you started with a state here and acted with it, you would get something non-normalizable here. Right, it wouldn't be a sensible... So this would have norm 1. And you would act with this, and because this is really blowing up. So any finite value of this, as long as the series kind of converges, I can set that to be whatever it is, which in icing, so n squared, so let's say n equals 1 minus.
Okay, so it's about taking the thermodynamics.
Yeah.
It also means the energy of the state you map to is not exponentially close to the energy of the state you stay.
If gamma is greater than J, that's right. In fact, it's not really a meaningful. It's just, you know, it's some operator that's infinite. I mean, you act with infinity on something, you kind of get whatever you do. It's just not a meaningful state. And that's, it's okay, explain something. I'll, okay, in the last 5 minutes where I do parts 2, 3, and 4, I'll say a few words about that.
Good, Emma.
This is not almost strong, but strong.
This is still strong, yeah.
So almost will become more almost.
So, to jump ahead, what will happen in the almost case is this series won't ever converge for any couplings. But this operator will still exist in any finite system. That's the almost. That's the almost part. So it obeys 1 and 2, and in any finite system, it'll be that, but the problem is, if you wish, yeah, this thing just blows up. So that's what happens.
So Paul, so here there's, you know, the Fermion parity is it only has two eigenvalues, 1 and -1.
Right, right.
And so this psi takes you between the two.
Yeah.
But kind of more generally, if you had
so
you have maybe 3 or 4. Eigenvalues of the operator, then it will take you.
Right, so in fact, the case we first studied was the Z3 case. I wrote this paper on parafermions. And so there, the analogous operator will cubes to 1 and all that. Instead of anti commutator, there's a phase. But this is the fermionic version, say it that way. But in these other cases.
Well, the
three state model doesn't happen. What I showed in this paper I wrote, I guess, 4 years ago now. If you break time reversal invariance by adding chiral interactions, then this exists. And actually, when I wrote the paper, I thought it was a strong serum mode. What some unpublished work so far suggests is actually almost, in fact, turns out, even though it's integrable. And that's why this relation between them.
For gamma larger than 1, this is still normalizable for any finite system.
For any finite system, yeah.
Because the
divergence is different, right? I mean, this is just clearly a divergent series, and what happens there, the coefficients are growing, but these coefficients are growing. So it'll still be a power series like that, but these coefficients are growing. So you might hope, I mean, in fact, we haven't proved that. But what appears to be is that these eventually grow so much, you know, for any finite system, I could pick a value of gamma over j so that this is still small. Point is, in the other case, you know, it'll be arbitrarily. Because we've gone through a pole. So the difference is there, you haven't gone through any pole. The series just doesn't converge. Yeah?
Something like that would probably be true for any topological system in 2D, too.
That's an interesting question. I don't think so, and that's why I keep saying the three-state pots, because as far as topological order is concerned, that's perfectly fine. The whole parafermion story. If it weren't, all these papers I read on parafermions wouldn't be interesting.
Well, I kind of have a feeling that this what you do is like dress something like a Bill Wilson book.
Yeah.
Am I doing this?
But sometimes you can't do it. In fact, and one of the things that I did prepare, but I'm not going to get to, so we have it. In fact, that paper I mentioned, that I raised off of the paper by German. German Meng, Alessia, and me explains how to see which models it works for versus which models. And, since we're already degenerate, this is the question period we've now translated before I actually give the results. So this is actually an interesting experiment in talk things. I just give tantalizing hints, and then I let you guys ask questions, and I'll describe the results.
Frank, it presumably works for the ground state.
So
unless you have an integer spectrum, I think, to start with, it will come.
So there's a simple argument that shows that the degeneracy persists for the ground state, a perturbative argument around the gamma equals zero limit equivalent. But then what you can see is basically, to use the boundary magnetization language, and I am going to explain that because that's interesting. So what happens is it's really easy to flip the boundary spin. And so the boundary magnetization goes away, like first order in perturbation theory. So this, let me answer that because I want to show you the boundary magnetization. I think I've said everything I need to say about that. So let me prove this for Ising now, that the existence of this operator, this psi in Ising, lets the boundary magnetization survive forever. Here's just to continue the calculation. So what we want to compute, We don't, like I said, we don't have to do this at infinite temperature, but let's do it at infinite temperature. So we'll just compute this correlation function. So this is a, now I'm going to dynamics. Okay, and so what this really means, of course, is just the sum over all states. So computing this operator. So this is, so this is the boundary, if this goes to a constant, then we have a boundary magnetization. So all this is measuring, if I have spin up at time zero, what's the probability I have spin up later or minus and minus? So if this goes to a constant value, then we have, if as t goes to infinity, this goes to a constant, that's what I mean by a boundary magnetization. There's still likely to be up if it started out up. It's still likely to be down. It may not be with probability 1. In fact, it's obviously not with probability 1 because, you know, this thing flips. So, of course, there's some probability it won't be up. But still, so. Okay, so it's actually like a two-line calculation. So, again, it's blackboard talk. Okay, I'm computing. So let's now plug in a complete set of states, and so these are the eigenstates. So these are the, let's take the energy eigenstates for the system. Don't need to know what they are to do this calculation, but they exist. So we sum over there. They're normalized. Again, don't have to for this calculation. All right. So let's do one more obvious step. So this is 1/2 L, and I'm going to insert a complete set of states, which I'll call S prime.
Sorry, but gamma over J is such that you're in the ordered phase?
And so we do choose gamma less than J. Well, I mean, I'm going to do the calculation for anything, but where it's interesting is where, because I'm going to use this joint zero mode, so gamma J is less than 1. All right, so again, this is everything I'm doing in this board now is just completely trivial. I just want to write it out carefully. And so what I get is e to the I. To this day, I never remember which sign to take, because all this thing is, you know, I'll say it in words, you know, e to the iht, e to the minus iht, or which order is it, I can never remember. But, so what usually happens, if you did this for a generic system, so this thing, you know, all these things, as the system size got big, would be really, really small. So it would be just spread out. But then you get this sum over, so usually you get some incoherent sum. And the oscillating bits, I mean, so what I mean by incoherent, should say the oscillating bits cancel. Up and down. And so, I mean, there's lots of contributions, but there's this phase here, so they all cancel, and it goes very quickly to zero. And you can see, if you see this on a computer, I mean, it's like, I forget, 10 time steps, it's gone. I mean, it's nothing. It's just gone. But let's do some trickery here. So let's look at this matrix element. And so now start to think, well, remember I made this big deal, just erased it, about the pairing between the thing. So I think that some systems, if this strong zero mode exists, they're special. There's a pairing between states. I made a big deal about how sigma 1z and that limit takes you from one to the other. And then I constructed this psi where sigma 1z is the first piece. But anyway, so let's write this now. So let's now consider the states S prime. The state S prime equals psi acting on S. So it's the partner. So now we're in the ordered phase in Ising language, but I'm an infinite looking at an infinite temperature state, but in the ordered phase. So let's take that. And we've normalized psi squared to be 1. So if S is normalizable, then S prime is normalizable.
That's not quite the partner, doesn't have the tail, right?
right?
That guy is almost a partner, but not quite.
Right, well, up to the tail, right. Right, up to the tail. And so again, I'm working in some very large L, so I throw out. Yeah. And when you do some computer, you know, you see the, so the finite size effects are there in real. Anyway, so then let's compute this operator. So I guess the first one. All right. So that's equal to this. All right. So considering that particular case of it. And okay, but I'm just going to now do something stupid looking. I'm going to write this as the anti-commutator. I've done nothing fancy. I've done a completely trivial manipulation, right? Just wrote the definition of the anti-commutator. But the cool thing about this, if you look at that definition, remember every term but the first one had that whole string. So this thing is just normalization, right? S is normalized. But this thing is just equal to minus S prime sigma 1 of S. Right. Oh, sorry. This is twice the normalization. Summing two terms. Just both orders. All the terms cancel except for the sigma one second. All right. But then this is exactly just what we had to begin with because sigma one set is a Hermitian operator. So just move that to the other side. So we get twice S sigma one Z S prime. For this particular S prime, mind you, is just equal to twice the normalization. Again, plus exponentially small corrections. But moreover, these two things have the same energy. So this is disproportionately, so this isn't what I meant by an incoherent sum. Most of this sum, this is a finite value, it's just the normalization. So this thing equals 1 over 2 to the L. So ignore all the incoherent states. Keep only the ones where S, only the partners. So we're doing a double sum, but we keep only the partners. And what we just get then is the normalization.
You're taking L to infinity before time to infinity?
I am taking L to infinity before time to infinity, right. Although you can ask, I mean, so what would happen if I didn't do that? Then it would fall, then after some time, it'll fall off, a finite size effect.
And then it may come back.
Yeah, because it's basically what's happening is the mode propagates from one end and then bounces back in disorder. So, and you know, if you wait long enough in a finite system, of course, it normalizes, but yeah. So I should say that let's not say infinity. The length is longer than the quote time in appropriate units. Okay, but then there's 2 to the L states, so this is just equal to n squared, which, if you remember, we derived a few minutes ago, is that.
So one would say this is a symmetry breaking. I mean, you call it a boundary magnetization.
Yeah, but I mean, that's all a magnetization ever is to me. I mean, it's just, right, you have, you know, states related by a symmetry. I mean, it's because, yeah, I agree that's an important point because, I mean, we need the Z2 symmetry. If I threw in a magnetic field, a longitudinal, I mean, this all just goes to hell. I mean, it's the states split, of course, because, I mean, there's no longer symmetry, so it's not even meaningful to talk about these sectors anymore. So, right, none of this thing. So I guess this is sort of, I mean, since that's just fashionable now, I have to put an SP in front of whatever I'm doing. So it could be SPSCM. Symmetry protected strong zero. It's just a Z2 symmetry.
So you go one side away from one, which you go a second side, then what happens? That guy decays to zero?
Yeah. Not necessarily. I mean, probably any. I should work it out for icing in general. I think what happens is no, it'll still be there because you know it's next to the one, so it'll be a smaller value. So if you're a finite number of spins away from the boundary, this will probably fall off. Yeah, actually, we should compute that. That we could compute for icing. Yeah, it'll fall off.
You'll do the same as.
Yeah, I mean, still right. You should do the same calculation, but the commutator. It's more complicated, right?
It probably decays exponentially.
Yeah. Actually, we didn't do it, but we can. We have explicit expressions.
This is saying the probability is not 1.
The probability is not 1. No. Depends. And then you see at the transition, it goes to 0.
To 0.
No, not 1. And again, as long as gamma's not zero, of course it's flipping. I mean that's the counterintuitive thing for me. When I forget who it was, Jack or Chris or someone said, you know, this will happen. I said, no way, come on, it's flipping. How can it survive? And as usual, that's why you collaborate with younger, smarter people.
But if you go to the zero temperature transition, even though you're infinite temperature, then that's the main point you're making.
Yeah, exactly, right. And so there it survives. But there it's obvious it survives. But again, like I was saying with Katayev and the topological stuff, the important statement is that this survives when you turn on gamma. And I think, again, it's a statement that I think isn't sufficiently appreciated.
So where here did the infinite temperature enter into calculation?
Just defining the state, that's all. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying some neural state. So with this argument, I could have picked like any eigenstate, so even a highly excited eigenstate, it doesn't matter. In fact, it's easier to do, but infinite temperatures.
Well, in fact, there's one.
Mm-hmm. So you put in all the states.
I just sum over all the states. The initial state is this equal amplitude sum over all the states. And then the normalization, that's where this 1 over 2 to the L came to normalize that.
Okay, so when you said almost forever for the almost...
All right, yeah, good. So I got 2 minutes, so let me summarize the rest of the talk.
Not almost in this...
All right, so, okay. So here's the rest of the talk now in 2 minutes. Maybe I'll run a minute over. All right, so I did part one. Thought I'd get a little further, but that's okay. So what happened, I wrote a paper last fall where I show that by explicit construction, this strong zero mode, this psi, exists in the XYZ spin chain. And if you like Majoranas, you can write this as two coupled Majorana wires. But some not arbitrarily coupled in a particular way, with a four Fermi term. So it's interacting. So that's why I meant this is not a free fermionic fluke. I can find it. So I just literally computed that. So this will have the same consequence. It's exactly the same formula. I computed the normalization. You can look in my, this calculation's not in my paper, but the normalization is. And so you just plug into that calculation. Here there's some corrections, turns out, because this commutator, we know what psi is explicitly, so we can compute this, but there's corrections, so this isn't exact.
What is XYZ spin chain?
XYZ spin chain. So it's like the Heisenberg model, except you have a sigma X, sigma X, sigma Y, sigma Z, and you put a JX, JY, JZ in front of them. So it's just a variation. People anisotropic, not in space, and carbon space. Okay, so that's part two. I was just going to outline that anyway, so that would have taken 10 minutes. But anyway, basically, you just write down the answer and you work hard to show it's
precise normal. Statement then?
So the precise statement is this operator, the strong zero mode exists in this model, proved it by explicit construction. I computed the normalization. It's an appendix longer than the paper.
And it has the same implications on the persistence of the... Yeah.
Right, so it has the same consequences. Yeah. Technically, it's a little more elaborate. So I should say, in icing, it turns out if you compute this, you'll get revivals. So I kept saying it's incoherent, but because icing is free fermions, you'll get revivals. It'll actually come back. But in XYZ, you don't. Even though it's integrable, you don't get revivals. Okay, so that one, actually, I did. So I've done that. And then the last statement, what happens if you break the integrability, and that's what we've been doing. And then what you can see, and we don't have a proof, but we have lots of good numerics, is that it seems to last a long, long time, as in millions, billions, trillions, depending on the parameters this
long
thing lasts.
What?
Well, in units of 1 over j. And I say, so if you take this expression for a generic model, I say within a few time steps it goes away. And this goes last, depending on gamma, the analog of gamma and J, and the other parameters. So you take the example we worked out a lot is icing, plus you add a four fermion interaction to icing. And
but then it's only slowly thermalizing, but eventually it will.
Eventually it will, yeah, eventually, but very slowly. And, you know, but the real world is finite, you know, if you do experiments. So this says that you couple to this reservoir and you die eventually, but, you know, that's entropy, we all die eventually, so. But if I could last for millions of time steps, I'm much happier than when I die within 10.
Slowly or in parameters exponentially slowly?
Yeah, that's why we haven't written the paper. We're trying to at least see a statement. So slow, we can't, the finite size effects that we see, so finite size will make this decay too. So in many parameter regimes, it's so slow that the finite size effects always win. Meaning, so we can't even get a good parameter, you know, we can't even see as you make the system bigger because the finite size effects just kill it. And
that will probably depend on how you break the integrability.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. No, so that's all. It's all parameter dependent. But the problem is, in the examples we've looked at, we can't even vary the parameters, and we have a formula which fits quite well. Let me just write down the formula.
But Paul, the integrability, the strength of the integrability breaking is of order gamma. That's what you're assuming, is it?
That's right. Right.
Treating
that. Yeah, that's right. In fact, it probably even has to be smaller than that. I mean, for what we see, it depends on how you break. Devil's in the details, and that's why, to some extent, it's depends on how you break it. Like, so whether you add a sigma x term to this, or a sigma z farther apart term, the physics is actually very different. It's really interesting. So there's this edge stuff going on that I mentioned briefly to somebody's question. You know, is it easy to flip the boundary spin? You get these sort of resonances. I mean, there's a whole story, and actually a lot is very similar to the questions people have asked in MBL when constructing these higher conserved currents, the L bits that everybody likes.
So you're saying in XY, I just want to understand the statement for XYZ again, because that's an integrable model, or is it?
It is an integrable model.
So then it's
much more complicated model. But it's not free fermions. That's an important point. It's got a four Fermi term, but it is integrable, yeah.
And the statement that you make about this almost, still got that infinite average?
Yeah, so what will happen here again, so in finite size, so what you'll see if you compute, or what we believe. So what happens, you do this computation, it's the same, but the problem is n, as the system size is going to infinity, it will be going, n will have to be going to zero the way I defined n, right? Because this series gets bigger and bigger, so n will be going to zero. So what happens is n will have some finite size, it'll be n of l, and as l goes to infinity, it gets smaller and smaller, so it goes to zero. This is what we, what we see there.
If I give you another model, is there any way except of good luck to find psi and explicit constant?
Well, I mean, I'd say the nice thing about this is you just look at the spectrum on like 8 sites. And if it's degenerate, then, you know, you at least should start looking. I mean, so that's really, so you do this with icing, and so I say add like a term J2 sigma Z J, J plus 2. And just look at it on the computer, and you see that degeneracy edge doesn't really go away for small enough J2. And what's also cool is all the physics doesn't depend on the sign of J2 either. So normally the ground state, this is a if I put a minus sign or a plus sign there instead of a minus sign, it's frustrating. And so the ground state gets all messed up, but all the physics that we see doesn't depend on the sign.
So what do you mean that the symmetry doesn't go away? I mean, is it like it's approximately there, or it's
So what happens? There's this incredibly complicated operator, like I did. What happens when in XYZ, the reason I just did it by brute force. And so I could compute term by term. It gets really kind of nasty, but you know, with enough patience, I have free time. So I computed the whole thing. But then if you break integrability, you see it work. So if you take, for example, this one, Jack, my student, he wrote a computer program to do this sort of order by order thing. And you find, like, by eight, he went up to 10th order or something, like, there's millions, literally millions of terms in that expansion. But the amazing thing is you now square it on the computer, and it still squares to the identity operator, but just times this nasty normalization. So that's why I call it almost. It's in any finite size, it's there, but the normalization of it is growing. But it's still very, very meaningful. This is a crazy complicated operator, and you square it, and it's the identity operator, which is just up to these exponentially small correction finite size bits. And that's what survives. And so that's why this is clearly a meaningful statement. I mean, yeah.
A bit of a crackpot question. I mean, you show that if you have this strong zero mode, then you have these very slowly relaxing observables. Yeah. To what extent can you make intuition of the converse statement to be true? Like, there's these models by Ignacio or so, which show these extremely slowly relaxing observables.
I didn't know about these models of Ignacio, so you should show them to me. And I would say my first guess is this, this operator exists in their model.
Effectively, a zero mode.
I would guess what happens. They'll be either, if it's integrable, there'll be a strong zero mode, and if it's not
it's
integrable,
like
they'll mean it's almost.
You
don't know exactly those ones with the sigma z magnetic field address.
Okay. Well, that's one model of the type would be like take a model. I mean, like make a disordered model, but with the dilation, with a completely classical guy that just produces the randomness of the Hamiltonian terms, okay. Then you switch on a small interaction on these dilations,
yeah.
And then you get extremely...
Okay, yeah, no, I would guess it would count as that. So we've checked some disordered cases, like you take XYZ and you disorder it. I assume you don't want
it's
disorder...
It's the dilation that effectively...
Oh, okay, yeah, I don't know these papers, we should look at them, but I would guess probably if you could go through this construction and this operator would be there, that would be my guess. Yeah, that would be great. If true.
So what does XYZ and chain and Ising chain have in common that's not shared by Putzman model?
So this is the thing I did really want to say, and again, so this issue of asking, is it easy in perturbation theory to flip the edge spin? And so what they have in common is if you look in perturbation theory, and you need, and you ask, what order of perturbation theory can I sort of flip the edge spin? And it's really difficult in both cases. Whereas like the Potts case I keep mentioning, you can see it's easy. That's what we discussed in this paper with German as the first author. So that's what they have in common, which isn't obvious, but it's not hard. Once you think to ask the question, it's not hard to see.
But the lattice Potts model is not integral. It's just...
Not off the critical point. Not off the critical point. Turns out the field theory, scaling field theory is, but the lattice model isn't. So probably what's true, in fact, is the field theory is integrable. So in these almost strong zero modes, the degeneracy seems to survive for all zero energy density states. And that's somehow, I think, a statement that probably that model may be integrable or at least special. When you go to finite energy density, then it's when it breaks down. Seems to. I mean,
you're
these are
saying
all
if it's hard to flip, it's there.
It's hard to flip, yeah.
If
it's hard
to flip,
flip
it stays strong.
But in these cases, there's cases like the Potts where it's easy to flip, and that's, again, it's a five-minute argument, but we just didn't have time to get it. Yeah.
Well, I think coming back to Jens' question, though, I think the statement about the models of Ignacio, I think you said the model with basically a random sigma z term, but it's not really random because there's some weak dynamics on the sigma z,
yeah.
Right? But that, I think, is not connected to strong. Maybe there is a connection to strong.
Oh, term, maybe.
The natural connection is to Matthew and Tarun's quantum disentangled liquids, because the idea is that you have two extremely large timescales. So on one timescale, it looks disordered for, say, the sigma. So it looks like a random field Ising model. But it's as though, you know, every 2 million years you went in and flipped the random field to another random field configuration. So if you wait at the age of the universe, presumably it'll be thermalizing, but it'll take a very long time.
Yeah, no, that's
over a million snapshots. So it's more like there are L-bits of that model rather than strong zero modes. There's like more like, it seems more in that sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think that's
right. We're talking about the L-bits. The one thing I should have said, I mean, this is a pure system, although the same physics, it doesn't have to be, but it's simpler to analyze, of course, as a pure system.
So for the Potts model, you're saying it, as you go off criticality, it goes over to almost zero?
No, it's not even almost.
It's not even almost.
It's not even almost. So there's sort of three classes of systems. There's the sort of very special ones where the strong zero mode exists. There's some still special ones, which at least all the examples are integral, and I believe almost certainly that they have to be. then there's this larger class of special models where it's still hard to flip the boundary spin, but ultimately you go to high enough orders in perturbation theory and you can flip it, things like that. The non-integral ones, where the almost strong. And then there's ones where just nothing happens. And so that's where this thing just will fall off right away.
Can I use the word quantum dynamical bottleneck? You say you have to go to very high order to...
Yeah, exactly.
Quantum dynamics,
well, that's a great
finite thing. Temperature, I mean, you're up a finite energy density, and there's kind of a bottleneck.
Yeah, yeah. Did you ever use that name in print? That's a great
name. Thinking maybe I might at some point.
Writing this down, because we'll credit you for a day. Bottleneck. I'm writing this down so I don't forget it. I learned I have to do that.
Copyrighted.
That's right.
Where is this bottleneck in this calculation? Is this something?
I didn't do that. Would be the.
For the almost one.
That would be the almost one, which I didn't get to. All right, so I'll have to come back and give another talk sometime and explain how that goes once our paper's done.
So how is it the almost case? How is it different from this case?
N will have. N will be a function of L. Well, in all cases, it's a function of L. But in the strong zero mode case, L, as L goes to infinity, N will go to a constant.
Oh.
In the almost case, it'll go to zero, but very slowly with L. And in the non-existent case, N just goes to hell right away.
Fast. Okay, well,
yeah. It just goes to hell. Yeah, instantly.
Does XYZ chain have, say, topological phase interpretation?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a Z2 topological phase. So in that sense, I guess it's like IC2. There's a Z2 order. I should have probably answered. That would be the standard answer to your question from before. There's a Z2 order that gets broken. But no matter, as long as you're off criticality in the XYZ model, there's always some Z2 order. So even when you cross a phase transition, you just change kind of order, so it's a little bit different. But there's always, there's Z2 ordered phase, gapped ordered phase. I've overstayed my welcome, I think.